Well, what a pleasure it is to be with you today as we start this first Sunday in our Advent journey. We're already off to a better start today. You might remember the last time I was with you, we had the power outage, if you were here. No lights, no heat, no microphone, no hot coffee. We're off to a good start. And today, torrential rains. I promise there won't always be a weather calamity associated when I preach. At our wedding in California 29 years ago this December, my former college professor of religion sent us a copy of his new book. And in the front, he wrote the following message: "Congratulations on your wedding in December. You have chosen the month with the longest nights in which to get married." Now, with the possible exception of newlyweds, many people find the long December nights to be dreadful and difficult. Why should this be? Some people, I suppose, have felt a bit uneasy in the deep December darkness, though they may not always be able to tell you why. My grandfather, I remember as a kid, he told scary stories at night about whistling past the graveyard at night to keep the devil away. A lot of people spend their time whistling in the dark in the same way, especially in December. December is the month in which the ancients celebrated the turning of the sun at the winter solstice. The Romans celebrated through the pagan Saturnalia festival. And primitive people used to watch the sun drop lower and lower on the horizon in great terror during this time of the year. And they were afraid that one day it would sink so low that it would never rise again, and there would be unending nights. And then, just as they thought there would never be another dawn, the sun slowly, gradually, would come back again. And each day it would rise a little higher, and it would stay a little longer. Such were the secular beginnings of this season that we call Advent. Madeline Lingle reminds us that somewhere in the depths of our unconsciousness, we moderns also share this primordial fear. Somewhere deep in the night, we stumble in the dark and bump up against the season with the longest nights known as Advent. I like the way the author and pastor Frederick Buechner writes about Advent darkness in his book, Whistling in the Dark, A Doubter's Dictionary. He says, "The house lights go off, and the footlights come on, and even the chattiest stop chattering as they wait in darkness. In the silence of a midwinter dusk, there is far off in the deeps of it somewhere a sound so faint that for all you know, it may be the sound of silence itself, and you hold your breath and listen. Later that night, you walk up steps to the front door. For a second, you catch a whiff in the air of some fragrance that reminds you of a place where you've never been, and a time you have no words for." Buechner concludes, "The extraordinary thing that is about to happen is matched only by the extraordinary moment just before it happens. Advent is the name of that moment." At times, the darkness is more than what surrounds us. More than a lack of light, it can become the dominant landscape and focus of the way we view the world and ourselves. My brother and sister-in-law living in Ventura have suffered from debilitating depression for a long time. And sometimes they struggle for days with even getting out of bed. And Jim said at one time, you know, especially when the blinds are down, it seems like it is unending night, and I just can't get up out of bed. Perhaps some of you have come here today with heavy burdens and challenges, searching for healing and hope as we begin this Advent season. We know a lot about darkness. We may know more about darkness than light. Others today might be struggling with anxieties or depression, fear or self-doubts, looking for a job, looking for help. There are those who are unemployed, those who are caught in the grips of addiction, those who are trying to keep a marriage or a family together, people who feel overwhelmed by the pressures of life, those suffering from pain and sorrow. Maybe it's difficult as they think about the loss of a loved one during this season, and praying for relief and the promise of a better day. If that's not enough, we are experiencing dark times as a nation, as we struggle and as we seek the truth. The power outage last month plunged most of us into darkness for at least 2 days. How did you make out? How did you spend your time with a flashlight or a candle? If you were smart, you had a backup generator. We did not. Some of you came to church. We gathered here without power and made our own kind of light. I heard some people say that during the outage, there was too much time with nothing to do. They didn't know all of a sudden what to do with all of that time when they couldn't turn a light on. Too much darkness. Too much anxiety about what lay just beneath the surface that may come out at night when our mind seems to be restless. Too much time to think and worry without our electronic devices to entertain and distract us during the power outage. I heard a lot of people say that was the biggest problem. They didn't have enough of a charge for their phone. And so Advent darkness came too early for some. There was a little girl born into poverty, shivering in the streets of New York City, and slipped into a church one Sunday morning during December to get warm. Sitting in the back pew, she heard a preacher declare from the pulpit, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." And when the service was over, the little girl went up to the preacher in the big pulpit and asked him what he meant. And he answered, "Why, Jesus Christ is the light of the world and has come to save us and set us free." The little girl looked up to him and replied somewhat sheepishly, "Well, then I wish he would come and hang around on our street because it's awfully dark down here." We all know a lot about darkness, maybe more than we want to. We spend much of our lives whistling in the dark, searching for the light, just trying to find a way to ease the existential angst. Perhaps when your children were young, you kept a nightlight on in the room so it wouldn't be too dark. My boys always wanted a light to be left on in the hallway when they were small. They didn't want it to get too dark. And now, truth be told, I leave a light on because I don't want it to be too dark, especially if I get up during the night. You've had similar experiences, I'm sure. You leave the light on when you come home late. You play the television or the radio just for some background noise. You call a neighbor or a friend just to hear another voice. You send a text or an email, or you log on to Facebook hoping to connect with a virtual friend. You listen to the echo of your own footsteps down an empty hall. Or you have a nightcap just before going to bed. All of these things are ways of whistling in the dark. The hope at the end of it all is that somehow we can make friends with the darkness, because the darkness of December's Advent can be a season of the soul as much as a season of the year. For some, at Christmas, the fears and the anxieties just seem to be compounded. When I used to work as a chaplain at a hospital in Chicago, the nurses always said that during December there were more drug overdoses, more suicide attempts, more calls to hotlines for help, more depression and alcoholism during the holidays than at any other time of year. They said it was true. Is it any wonder that so many people see the holidays as something to just get through, and they're glad when it's all over? At a former church I served, we had a blue Christmas service. I don't know, have you ever had one of those here? And it was very meaningful for those that experienced loss or loneliness or stress during the holidays, maybe thinking about a loved one who was not there, and it was helpful for them to come and light a single candle in the darkness. Darkness can invade our souls just as the cold night air. Scripture talks a lot about darkness. Isaiah reminds that the people have walked in darkness, but they are about to see a great light. But they would have to wait. That's the catch. The people would have to wait for the light. It wouldn't come right away. Yet he prophesies that Jerusalem would be safe because the Lord dwelt in the temple. And this was affirmed when the Assyrians were besieging Jerusalem. This was amazing, that the people were becoming desperate. And suddenly, inexplicably, the Assyrians stopped and they departed. And they left in a hurry, leaving Jerusalem safe. We hear that story in Isaiah 37. As Christians, we look back on Isaiah's work and we see a foreshadowing of the Christ who is to come to fulfill Isaiah's prophecy. And in the gospel lesson this morning, John the Baptist comes to prepare the way for the Christ who brings light and hope to people who had been surrounded by darkness. John was not that light, we hear, but he came to bear witness to that light, the gospel tells us. So the purpose of this Advent season is to prepare ourselves so that we will be able to see his light once again. I love the words to that hymn, Born in the Night, that we sang just a little bit ago. Clear shining light, Mary's child, your face lights up the way. Light of the world, Mary's child, dawn on our darkened day. The world can be a dark place, especially in December, especially at this time in our history and the stress of the holiday season. But we can be confident that we do not walk alone in the December darkness, because God is there right beside us, illuminating our lives and showing us the way, though we do not always know it. The nights may be long for a season, but the darkness inside no longer has hold over us. We are not alone. Many people came to Jesus in the darkness of night. Nicodemus came to Jesus by night. The shepherds came to Jesus by night, as did the wise men following a star. One way or another, I suspect we all come to Jesus by night, stumbling and grasping for whatever light we see. But the good news of the gospel is that Christ has come to dwell within us and among us, and help us to face our fears and our darkness. And just in case we missed it the first time, he's coming again. He's coming again, and we need to get ready. There is no relationship so broken that he cannot restore it. There is no problem so serious that he cannot show us a way to resolve it. There is no pain so deep that he cannot intervene and heal it. And just as we near the longest nights of the year, Christ is getting ready to come and bring his light into the world once again. And you don't necessarily have to be a Christian. Seek the divine light and the guidance from whatever source is calling you. Sometimes, you know, if we're in a dark room or we're outside, if we just give it a little time, you ever notice how our eyes can adjust to the darkness and we can see just a little bit the shadows and the outline? That's how it is in Advent, as we remain patient and watching and hopeful for the light that is to come again. I think that's what the Christian philosopher Soren Kierkegaard meant when he said, "Faith sees best in the dark. Faith sees best in the dark." We begin to make friends with the darkness when we realize that God is right here beside us. No matter how dark it seems, either without or within ourselves. We begin to make friends with the darkness when we accept our shadow self. As Carl Jung writes, Richard Rohr talks about the same thing. Beginning to make friends with that dark side of our inner being that perhaps we have been reluctant to face. The poet Dylan Thomas made an effort to come to terms with his own darkness in his classic poem, A Child's Christmas in Wales, and it's one that I like to reread every Christmas season. He writes, "Looking through my bedroom window, out into the moonlit snow, I could see the lights in the windows of all the other houses on the hill, and hear the music rising from the long, steady, falling night. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept. What a beautiful image that is. I turned the gas down. I got into bed. I said some words to the close and holy darkness, and then I slept." I love that image, the close and holy darkness. Even the darkness now belongs to God. When we are able to befriend the darkness and befriend ourselves, the darkness no longer has power over us, and we begin to recognize God's light and experience God's peace. Very soon we will be able to travel by starlight to a stable in Bethlehem, where we will be able to behold his light once again. Amen.